everybody, and welcome to the Doc Talk Podcast. I'm Patrick Campbell, Associate Editor with MD Magazine, and I will be your host for this edition of Doc Talk as we discuss PolyPill with Dr. Kazi. Welcome to the Doc Talk. If you wouldn't mind introducing yourselves and giving us a little bit of background on PolyPill and this recent study that you led, then we can dive into our chat.
Yeah. So I'm Dhruv Kazi. I'm a member of the Faculty of Medicine at Harvard Medical School. I'm the Associate Director of the Smith Center, which is a research center at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. And I also run the cardiac critical care unit here at BIDMC. I became interested in the PolyPill because there is a contradiction of sorts in the policy world. On the one hand, we believe PolyPills are really effective for conditions like HIV and malaria and TB, where by putting the number of drugs that the patient needs to take into a single pill, we make it easier for the patient. Patients are more likely to take the medication. We're more likely to achieve the health goals we want to achieve. It seems like an approach that should work for cardiovascular disease because people who have had heart attacks and strokes in the past need to be on 4, sometimes even more medications. And so putting them in a single pill would reduce pill burden, and this should be an effective approach. It's actually been described for cardiovascular disease now over 2 decades ago. And there are some PolyPills available globally, but there hasn't been much uptake. And so part of our question with the study was to try and understand why. Why has that not become the standard of care? And if it were to become the standard of care, what benefits could we achieve? So it turns out that the reason physicians in particular, don't like to prescribe the PolyPill in some of these countries is because there's a concern that, well, what if patients have side effects to one of the drugs and we don't have the ability to monitor for side effects? Would we end up hurting our patients? And there's the concern about costs, which is if you put all the drugs into a single pill, is it possible that the pill would be too expensive for the patient to afford? And what we've shown in this analysis, and it complements the Polyuran study, which was Polyuran was run in, as the name suggests, in multiple villages in Iran, where people were randomized to the PolyPill or usual care. We, on the other hand, were building a mathematical simulation model of multiple countries, India, China, Nigeria, South Africa, and Mexico, large countries, populous, with a very high burden of cardiovascular disease, and asking the same question, which is, what happens if we were to use, instead of usual care, switch people over to a hypothetical PolyPill that contains the 4 pills? And we showed that, you know, the benefits clearly outweigh the side effects. So for every 1,000 patients treated for 5 years, you'd avoid about 50 major cardiovascular events, and we'd somewhere between 5 and 10 adverse events. So the clinical benefit was there. And if the cost of the pill were, if we were to somehow bulk purchase this pill so that it was available at an affordable price, then in fact, what we call public sector pricing, in fact, adopting the pill saves money. And there's almost no intervention in cardiovascular medicine today that both saves lives and has the potential to save money. There's very few of those. And so this is one of them where in the short to intermediate term, we could end up saving money by putting people on the drugs they need because you avoid heart attacks and strokes. So we were really encouraged by that finding. And because we're able to address effectiveness concerns, safety concerns, and cost concerns all in one study across multiple countries. And those are the key barriers that there currently exist to widespread adoption of the PolyPill.
All right, thank you for that. Now, it's pretty obvious the benefits of increased patient compliance, which seems to be the main positive factor when thinking about PolyPill. Now, what difference does this make from a patient perspective and also a physician perspective? Obviously, reduction of these sorts of events are ideal for patients. Patients don't want to suffer from adverse cardiovascular events. And then what benefits does this give you as a physician?
Yeah. So, you know, it's very interesting you should ask that. when we started this project, the governing idea about polypills was that rolling different medications into a single pill achieves most of its benefit because patients take the pills. I'm more likely to take one pill than I am to take four pills if I were a patient. What we found, interestingly, was that this increase in patient compliance, or what we now call patient adherence, is a very small part of the effectiveness of the polypill in low and middle income countries, the cardiovascular polypill. What was happening is that in most cases, patients weren't even being prescribed all the four guideline-directed medications, so the four medications that they needed weren't even being prescribed. So some patients were getting only aspirin, some were getting aspirin and a statin, but very few patients were actually getting all four meds. So when you introduce the polypill, the major benefit is that instead, when the doctor writes one prescription for a heart pill, they get all four drugs. And that is a major driver from a public health standpoint. So this is, while this is great for patients, the real mechanism of action is because physicians are prescribing more medications, more life-saving medications to the patients who need them. It's kind of easier from a physician's perspective. They don't have to track four separate prescriptions, refill four sets of prescriptions, etc. From the patient's perspective, instead of taking four pills, I would be taking one pill. That helps me not just start the pill, but also stay on it long term. And it's the combination of these two effects, easier for physicians and easier for patients, that results in this large population level benefit of avoiding heart attacks, avoiding strokes. And from a societal perspective, heart attacks and strokes, in low and middle income countries often occur at ages 55 or 57, meaning these individuals are still working and actively contributing to the economy. So the societal perspective is avoiding all of this early disability or death and lost productivity, and while at the same time avoiding costs related to heart attack and stroke. So it's clearly beneficial to patients, it's easier for physicians, and it has substantial clinical and economic benefits for society.
Now, this next one's a bit hypothetical, but it tracks back to the cost-effectiveness of polypill that you guys found in the study. What would it mean? Obviously, there has to be some societal changes in the way polypill is accepted and viewed. But what would it mean to a lot of these low and middle income countries that are stricken with incredible rates of atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease? What would it mean to them to have a cost-effective option to treat this disease?
Yeah, so thank you for asking. So now we're talking about the economics of heart disease in low and middle income countries. We think of heart disease as a health condition of the wealthy, but we now know that it's not the case. 80% of heart attacks and strokes happen among low and middle income countries, where 80% of people live. So the rates are about the same as in high income countries, but they happen when patients are younger in low and middle income countries. So we have our first heart attacks in the US typically around the age of 62. In India, it's between 52 and 55, so almost a decade earlier in life. For low and middle income countries, the distinction between something that's cost saving and cost effective is an important one. Cost saving means that not only does the intervention pay for itself in the long term, it in fact, earns some money in return. So by switching to the polypill, all the savings that you're making from avoiding heart attacks, etc., over a 5-year period, if we are able to get the polypill at a good price, these countries will actually save money. So certainly break even, but may even save money. In contrast, if the polypill were to be more expensive than that, there would still be a lot of lives saved, but there would be some money that has to be spent by the country in order to save those lives. So it's good value for money, but the countries still have to add that to their healthcare budget. And as you were alluding to, these budgets tend to be tight. Healthcare budgets are tight in low and middle income countries. They don't have the room to suddenly allow for a new expenditure, even if it's very cost effective. So what we're trying to say is that this is good value for money, a secondary prevention polypill priced correctly, used correctly, is good value for money from a societal perspective, but it will require strategic thinking on A, how to make the pill widely and reliably available in these countries where supply chains can be difficult, and at the same time, have physicians and other providers use this drug more widely. So we're providing the evidence base, but I think this is only getting us halfway there. We're going to need strategic global investments to reduce the cost of the poly pill and to increase uptake of the poly pill in these countries.
Okay, and then just lastly, why don't you think we'll ever see the implementation of poly pill in the U.S. or other quote-unquote developed nations?
Yeah, so the poly pill in higher income countries has also been a source of considerable controversy. And if you look at some of our leading cardiovascular providers talking about the poly pill, it's like, well, I don't want a one size fit all fits all. I want to be able to customize my therapy for the individual patient. I think in reality, the challenge is the patients don't want to take multiple pills. They'd love to have their pills all rolled into a single pill so that they're taking one pill twice a day instead of five pills twice a day. And similarly, physicians would be only writing for one prescription. I think all of the advantages that we're talking about in LMICs also exist in high-income countries. There are poly pills available in Europe. We're already using fixed-dose combination pills for hypertension in the U.S. So slowly but surely, we're seeing poly pills being used more frequently in cardiovascular disease. But this particular poly pill that we're talking about, a poly pill for people who have already have heart disease or have had a stroke in the past, is not available in the U.S. market. And we'd like to see that change. I think that with more and more data coming around, both from PolyIran and from simulation modeling studies like ours, there is a new evidence base saying that this drug is effective, it's safe, it's cost effective. And so if the demand were to increase in the US, I think that I'm optimistic that we'd see a poly pill available for our populations. I don't think that the poly pill is a single pill in the US. In the US, there might be, you know, seven poly pills with varying doses of various drugs. So you can still pick and choose what's the right combination of drugs for your patient. But what the patient sees is a single pill,
okay,
which would be very good for them. Yeah.
All right. Now, that was about it on my questions. Before I let you go, is there anything else about poly pills that you want to share with our listeners or that you think is important that I might not have asked you about?
Yeah, I think it's important at this stage to make a distinction between a cardiovascular poly pill for primary prevention and a cardiovascular poly pill for secondary prevention, meaning those who are at high risk for disease versus those who already have the disease. What we've studied in our analysis is exclusively patients who have pre-existing disease, and so our conclusions cannot be extrapolated to people who are at high risk but don't currently have disease. In contrast, the PolyIran study included individuals both in primary prevention and secondary prevention categories and showed that the poly pill works. We, as clinicians and cardiologists, have to understand that while there is value in precisely fine-tuning each of the individual medications for our patients, sometimes what our patients want is a single pill, because it improves adherence. And what the health system might need is simply getting more people on the medications so that we can have fewer heart attacks and strokes. This is a global problem. We're starting to see this cardiovascular disease on the rise again in the U.S. as well. And so we're going to have to think creatively about solutions to tackle this problem at scale. At the same time, the poly pill is not a silver bullet. It's not going to fix all our problems. And as we try and think of creative ways to tackle cardiovascular disease in low and middle income countries, we're going to have to acknowledge that the poly pill is one piece of the armamentarium. We're going to have to invest in high quality primary care, in ensuring reliable supply chains for medications, in ensuring that patients who have a heart attack or stroke can get diagnosed correctly and started on effective life-saving treatments quickly. And those strategic investments still need to happen. And given the scale of the problem, the time to act on them is now.
That's it for this edition of Doc Talk. Thank you again, Dr. Kazi, for taking part. For the latest in PolyPill and cardiology news, be sure to head to mdmagazine.com. Thank you for listening.